Good afternoon. My name is Matt McKenna. I am the director of the Great Lakes Washington Program at the Northeast Midwest Institute. I wanted to welcome you to today's briefing by the ACRCC about its 2017 Monitoring Response Plan and its recent activities on the Chicago Area Waterway System. Today we will be receiving briefings by Charlie Woolley, who is with the Fish and Wildlife Service, and Kevin Irons, who is with the Department of Natural Resources. Charlie?
Well, thank you, Matt. Good afternoon, everybody. Honored to be here. Kevin is to my right. To my left is Bill Bowen with EPA in Chicago. And we have Janet Cordy from the United States Army Corps of Engineers, who's also here to assist with any questions that might be directed towards the Corps. So again, we're honored to be here this afternoon. What we'd like to do is just briefly walk through a quick presentation that highlights activities that the Asian Carp Regional Coordinating Committee has been involved in for the last two and a half months. We're really going to focus on activities that have occurred in June and July here with this briefing. The Asian Carp Regional Coordinating Committee is made up of 27 U.S. and Canadian federal, state, provincial, and regional institutes. We work very well together. Our goal is to keep Asian carp out of the Great Lakes, prevent the introduction, spread, and establishment of Asian carp in the Great Lakes. At this point, I just want to make sure that everybody is familiar. When we, the Asian Carp Regional Coordinating Committee, say Asian carp, we're primarily focused on silver and bighead carp. There are grass carp further down the Illinois waterway system. There are black carp, and there are common carp that enter into this conversation. But for the work that the Asian Carp Regional Coordinating Committee is responsible for, it's the silver and the bighead carp that we're concerned about. We have a federal executive committee that manages the day-to-day operations, monitoring response work group that's responsible for on-ground activities. In the last 2 years, we've really beefed up our communications and outreach work group. They're responsible for letting and keeping the American public up to date as to what we've been doing. We have an action plan that we produce every year that highlights and provides a blueprint for us in our daily activities. We usually come into D.C. early in the calendar year and present the action plan. A lot of you folks have been at previous briefings when we've done that. And it really talks about, you know, our earlier response and our rapid response and our contingency planning for Asian carp. It provides the blueprint for all of us, particularly our field folks, as we enter into a new year and deal with the threat of Asian carp to the Great Lakes.
Thanks, Charlie. We're going to talk about the monitoring part of this action plan, the boots on the ground. And it's not to say we don't work in other bases, but this monitoring response plan is really the focus on the Illinois waterway. This monitoring plan also includes detection and control efforts. That's in basically the upper part of the waterway. We'll talk about the map later, but in the upper third of the Illinois River as it gets closer to Lake Michigan, upstream of Starved Rock, Lock and Dam, and in the area of the Des Plaines and Kankakee Rivers. We also talk about how we manage populations in that area, and also we have modeling and evaluations that are ongoing to help control future efforts. Further, we're also assessing the role of technology, deploying pilot projects, making sure we have the best things implemented currently. I did mention the control part of that. I mean, that is part. We remove 5.5 million pounds annually, and over the last year, about 1.1 million pounds from the upper river in part of these management efforts. The MRP also keeps the pulse really on the waters closest to Chicago. We call it Chicago Area Waterway System, as well as those below that management area in the lower Illinois River. In 2017, the plan also has a role to encourage business development as part of our overall plan, looking at the lower part of the Illinois waterway, removing 4 to maybe 8 million pounds in the future years. Business evaluations are ongoing. We've got contractors working with, you know, what makes a successful business and how it can be folded in to carp management. We also remain very vigilant when it comes to law enforcement and outreach to make sure that if we're doing everything we can, we want the public and others to also do their part to make sure that they're doing the correct things. That's a very cooperative program, I think, across those things. And finally, in 2016, we clarified and made a very clear contingency response plan, really to outline aggressive actions that we'll take if we find significant changes in Asian carp numbers or locations throughout the waterway. So this spring, as we've done every year, we have a spring intensive monitoring effort throughout the Chicago area waterways. That's the map you're seeing here, and it has yellow and blue dots depicting different gears and where they're deployed throughout the waterway. The SIM event is conducted twice a year, 2 weeks in the spring and 2 weeks in the fall, and it's really to get through evaluation and ongoing effort, this is prescribed so we can find rare fish if they occur throughout the waterways, as well as detect changes in the fish populations there. So we do electrofishing and contract netting. That's using contract netting, it needs to be clarified. We hire commercial fishermen to work alongside our agencies, and they bring a very particular skill set of being able to catch Asian carp from other parts of its range, and we bring them to us working very closely with our partners, biologists on board, and they've really been able to give us a leg up in this effort. But the electrofishing and contract netting we do occurs in the North Shore Channel, the north and south branches of the Chicago River, the Chicago River itself, the Chicago Sanitary and Ship Canal, the CalSag Channel, the Little Calumet River, and Lake Calumet. Throughout the waterways, we hit it very severely with effort. And each of these sampling events in the spring is predicated by going out into the water and deploying environmental DNA sampling throughout. A technique Fish and Wildlife Service is bolstering, and we do that prior to putting any of our boats on the water. For this year, it's of note, we just had the results that no eDNA was detected for bighead or silver carp in the waterway. So during the seasonal intensive monitoring, actually day 9 and 10 of this two-week event, we caught about 16,944 fish, and unfortunately one was a silver carp. So that was, I remember the call when it came in, 9:44 in the morning, someone said, hey, we caught a silver carp, and I just paused. We've done a lot of effort up there in 8 years, and this is the second one in 8 years that we caught. So that was Thursday, June 22nd. There is the vile silver carp. The response to the silver carp was initiated almost immediately. And the best way to demonstrate the importance and value of the contingency response plan is probably to walk you through the events of that day, June 22nd, and what happened immediately after. Spoiler alert, we didn't capture any additional silver carp, but it's important to understand what great lengths we went to. So at 9:44, I did get that call. That fish was 28 inches long, about 8 pounds, and we found out afterwards it was a male. It was handled like evidence. We bring CPOs, our conservation police officers, to site. They essentially handle this like evidence, and they took it to a research facility at Southern Illinois University where we can provide even more information, a fish autopsy, if you will, to provide us more information. This fish was caught 9 miles from Lake Michigan, about just a little over 2 miles from T.J. O'Brien Lock and Dam. This was in a small marina, and once this fish was caught, the fishermen that were in the area immediately surrounded it. They cordoned it off with netting, that whole marina, and put another 2,000 yards of gill net and a couple hours worth of electrofishing effort right where that fish was caught. In our experience, these fish are schooling fish, and if there was one, there could be another, so we acted very quickly. Concurrently with that, I guess we had a biologist on board that was able to help identify the fish. It wasn't netted really strongly, so they got it in the boat immediately. So using a live fish capture protocol and concurrent to the capture of this fish, we had many things going on. The immediate actions surrounding the fish, and then secondarily communication with our partners. Hey, we caught a fish. So this is outlined in our contingency plan in the monitoring response plan for 2017. We shared this information among our partners, and we also were developing the plan of what do we do next. This is supported by our communication work group, co-chaired by Illinois DNR and the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service. Again, it was a surprise to us, and we didn't find out until after the capture of this that eDNA was not found in the area.
I think what I'll do is I'm just going to stand here and kind of just give you a quick overlay based on what Kevin has said and provide just a little context. So the city of Chicago is right here. This is the T.J. O'Brien Lock and Dam, where on June 22nd, the silver carp that Kevin referenced was captured right below this lock and dam. This is a significant structure, the Army Corps of Engineers electrical barrier, about 37 miles from southern Lake Michigan. So the significance of what Kevin just referenced with the silver carp being captured above the Corps barrier on June 22nd is that this is the first time we've seen a silver carp this high up in the waterway system. Previously, silver carp had been found in this section of the Illinois waterway system. This is about 30 miles above the previous location for silver carp. And the question is, with the Corps electrical barrier here, how did this fish get here? And we just don't know that right now. We're doing some microchemistry work that Kevin referenced with Southern Illinois University. We're going to look at the genetics of this fish, try to answer that question to the best of our abilities. But this is an outlier as of right now. We had previously, 7 years ago, captured one big head carp right in this area. So over the last 10 years now of intensive work in this waterway system, one silver carp captured there, one big head carp captured here. The rest of the lower Illinois waterway system is where we have populations of all life stages of silver and big head carp, and that's downriver, quite a few miles south of the Army Corps of Engineers electrical barrier. So I don't want to give anybody the impression that we have Asian carp running up the Des Plaines River, running up the Chicago area waterway system, constantly being repelled by the Corps barrier. That's not the case. Not the case. The carp are down here in this part of the river section, and we do a lot of surveying work, Kevin's staff, our staff, in this section, and we just don't see any Asian carp here, which is a good thing because we know they're not trying to get through the barrier or attacking or pressing the barrier on a daily basis. So that's the lay of the land here as it relates to this issue and the significance of this find on June 22nd.
Thanks, Charlie. We don't want to leave out the Army Corps of Engineers field crews that's there also, especially below the electric barrier. So I'm going to move on to the contingency action and what this looked like. We talked about some of the notification and communication. We devised a plan probably within about 6 hours of capture of that fish with the managers that know how to deploy effort. And we did this and prescribed about 2 weeks worth of effort in 13 miles of river. You can see the green chevron in the middle there. That is T.J. O'Brien Lock and Dam on your TV screen. And we worked essentially above and below that location. You see the red dot just downstream of that T.J. O'Brien, and that is the location of that silver carp. You can also see we worked into Indiana waters, so thank you, Indiana, for allowing us to go out and work into Calumet Harbor of Lake Michigan. We want to leave nothing to chance. And you can see yellow and blue dots. Generally, the yellow dots depict more offshore gears, generally gill nets that our contract fishers are deploying. The blue are more agency-specific efforts, electrofishing in particular, and where that big clump of sampling is, we also deployed things like fike nets in those areas, big trap nets out there that stayed in place for the duration. So we did have crews of the Fish and Wildlife Service, Army Corps of Engineers, Illinois DNR, and the Illinois Natural History Survey, along with our contracted fishers over these 13 miles. The U.S. Coast Guard was a pretty important partner with us because with all this activity on the waters over the 2 weeks, including the July 4 holiday, they had a notice to mariners. So they were on the radio working with industry to make sure that we didn't block any waterway. But we want to make sure there's communication. Hey, there's a bunch of big silver boats out there, so we try to communicate that very well.
So during this two-week period that Kevin just described, we had electrofishing boats out on the Illinois waterway system. We had contract commercial fishermen that Illinois DNR had hired that were out setting miles and miles of nets looking for additional fish. Bottom left-hand corner is a picture of some sophisticated gear called a papier net that we utilized. Bottom right is an electrofishing boat. So we spent a tremendous amount of time, energy, and effort after this initial capture of the silver carp doing extensive work above T.J. Lock and O'Brien Lock and Dam and below the dam, extensively looking with this kind of gear for fish. At the same time, we had a very active communication strategy. We had at least two announcements that went out to folks here in Washington on the Hill that were interested, keeping our partners and members of Congress appraised as to what was happening. And we really did, I think, a pretty good job of communicating the activities that we're involved in.
Talk just a little bit and reinforce what contract netting is. First observation from these photos is they have a different dress code than Charlie's Fish and Wildlife Service employees. But these guys work really hard. In this case, this is gill net material. They're actually out in the Calumet Harbor area, and they captured a common carp. Now, common carp have been a nuisance species in the U.S. for about 100 years. Thankfully, they didn't catch a big head or a silver carp. But you can see by the numbers, over almost 2,000 person hours were deployed over those two-week period, 43 miles of this gill net throughout that 13 miles of waterway, in all 91 hours of response by all the teams working very closely together. We had protocols, we were communicating, sometimes working together with an electrofishing boat and a contract netter to push or drive fish in, really deploying our best tools here. And we caught a bunch of fish. I already told you we didn't catch a big head or a silver carp, but in this 13 miles, we caught over 20,000 fish alone. Very intense effort. About 47 different species, 5 hybrid groups in the response action. This did include the banded killifish, an Illinois state threatened species in the upper right, a nice little fish. That's an adult male there. Some other fish we have, a male pumpkin seed, a white bass, and again, reinforcing we didn't find any big head or silver carp. We did catch 6 grass carp in this, and we've got those sent off for further analysis as well. So we came together after 2 weeks of really intense work on the heels of 2 weeks of focused work already in the cause, and our monitoring response work group came up with recommendations to really close out this response. We didn't have any additional insight that if there were any fish at all, they must be extremely rare. And we recommend returning to the 2017 monitoring response plan. We'll talk about the plan a little bit. It's quite exhaustive. I brought one copy with. It is available on asiancarp.us. But there were some common sense things we wanted to do. In addition to the dedicated effort that we do in the fall, intensive monitoring effort, we'll do that here in September, we wanted to make sure one of these fishers returned to the area around Lake Calumet where this fish was caught. Just because generally we focus in the other end of the waterway in the fall. So we're going to have a fisherman stay in that area for the 2 weeks, and that's an additional person. We also have scheduled work between now and the end of the year below the electric barrier. The U.S. Army Corps of Engineers is doing some work there, and they're going to close navigation for a period of time. We're going to make sure our netting, which is scheduled for the same time, takes advantage of that. When the water is slowed, we can put net in places we don't normally put net, out in the middle of the main channel, and we'll coordinate those efforts really closely with those ongoing. That's just a common sense, efficient thing to do. And the Fish and Wildlife Service, while we don't use it for directing effort necessarily, the lack of eDNA in the waterway was compelling to us, so the Fish and Wildlife Service is going to do some more eDNA work throughout the cause prior to our fall effort.
So we've talked a little bit about the 2 months of extensive work here in June and July. At the same time, we also have our eye on the Great Lakes proper. So we really focused in the Chicago area waterway system the last couple of months. But as part of our traditional monitoring, we also want to make sure that we're out in the Great Lakes themselves in potential areas that could possibly harbor either silver or bighead carp. So we have an extensive program where we trawl in some shallow water bays and estuaries throughout the Great Lakes. We're looking for not only Asian carp, but any potential other invasive species. So we have one eye focused on the Chicago area waterway system, the other eye focused on the Great Lakes proper, with electrofishing, trawling, and just traditional fisheries sampling out in the Great Lakes. We're also continuing to do environmental DNA sampling in the Great Lakes, which means as a fish swims, a little bit of mucus comes off the fish. We can actually go out and get water samples and take that mucus and look and see where that mucus came from, what kind of fish, what kind of species. Incredible technology that we have at our fingertips. So we're going to continue to process about more than 8,000 eDNA samples from the Great Lakes proper over the next couple of months. These are the areas where we go in and do the eDNA work and the traditional sampling work. We have made sure that all these activities are coordinated with our state partners. But you can see it's focused on areas that are relatively shallow, inshore, places like Green Bay, Western Lake Erie, Saginaw Bay, Lake St. Clair, areas that could potentially, based on the life history of either bigheads or silver carp, potentially harbor those fish species. And we've also wanted to make sure that we continue to inform folks of what's happening. We continue to update AsianCarp.us, our website. Anything that we've discussed here today is on that website. Additional information going back 7 or 8 years is there. We continue to post press releases there. We spend a lot of time, energy, and effort to make sure it's updated almost on a weekly basis. Any observations that Kevin's staff, Army Corps of Engineers staff, Fish and Wildlife Service staff might make, if it's reasonable and significant, we post it here. So just a great tool to keep updated on what's happening with Asian carp in the Great Lakes. And if you ever have a question about Asian carp, we have some reference material here, plus some points of contact that would be able to help you with any of your questions or your concerns. So on behalf of the Asian Carp Regional Coordinating Committee, particularly Army Corps of Engineers, EPA, Fish and Wildlife Service, Illinois DNR, we're honored to be here this afternoon. Glad that we were able to come in and report that we have not, based on all this extensive sampling, come up with any more silver or bighead carp above the Corps' electrical barrier. It's good news. Probably the best news Kevin and I have received in years was the daily updates we were getting this last couple of weeks during our sampling period, where every end of every day we'd get a note saying no. And it was the best no I think I've ever seen or heard in the course of my professional career, where we kept getting these notes, no more bigheads of silver captured above TJ O'Brien Lock and Dam or below it. So with that, we're glad to answer any questions. We do have representatives from the Corps here and from EPA to ask questions that relate to their authorities. So the floor is open. Thank you, Matt.
Thank you. So, does anybody have any questions? I don't think there's some people behind us as well.
So, I have a question about the fishing and the eDNA. So, I'm guessing that, you know, if you do all the fishing, you can't guarantee that there's no carp, but you use the eDNA to reinforce it. Did you have any eDNA detections before that would make think that this carp was there initially?
Yeah, great question. We had actually gone in and done some extensive sampling, eDNA sampling, about 2 weeks prior to the event that captured the silver carp, and no, we did not get an eDNA hit there.
Okay.
So, you know, we're continuing to, you know, look at that, monitor that, but we have no record of an eDNA hit in that area, and then 2 weeks later we found the silver carp there. But again, a lot can happen in 2 weeks.
So, as a follow-up, how probable would it be through your fishing techniques that you'd even find a carp? I know that a big issue in Lake Erie with grass carp is that there might be tens of thousands of grass carp in Lake Erie, but they've only been able to find maybe 10, 20, 30, 40, 50 over the years. So how effective do you think those fishing techniques are in the eDNA of actually finding that there's carp there?
Sure. I think the situation that we're up against in the Illinois waterway system is a lot different than Lake Erie because it's so small and confined. It lends itself very well to these traditional techniques and tools that Kevin's staff and our staff, the commercial fishermen, are using because it's a small waterway versus a huge western basin of Lake Erie. So from the scale difference, we feel we're pretty effective with the tools that we have due to the fact we're working in a small, constricted river system.
Okay. And when do you expect the grass carp analysis to come back?
USGS usually runs the ploidy analysis, so we're looking at whether that is a fertile fish or an infertile fish.
Right.
We have maybe gathered 43, you know, over the last 10 years or so from the waterway. It's a mix of triploid and diploid fish. Mm-hmm. And so specifically over the next 2 or 3 weeks.
Okay. Can you let us know when you find out?
Absolutely.
Diploid or triploid?
Yep.
Absolutely, and that's the beauty of the website, too. As soon as we get that information, we'll have it posted there. But we know that there are folks here on the Hill that are very interested, and we will certainly let you know.
Thank you.
And when Kevin is saying triploid and diploid, we're talking about some of these fish are fertile, some of them are not fertile. So that's the terminology. And that's as it relates to grass carp.
Yep.
Is there a plan to push back the carp, or is this just to stagnate their movement forward into the lake?
Great question. So we do have a strategy. Our monitoring and response plan has an introduction that really talks about short-term versus long-term strategy. Maybe 10 years ago, we weren't sure the answer to that question. We program a lot of our effort for removal. We think it's been effective for reducing the population below the electric barrier, and we want to continue to do that. Things like that. We have a model supported by U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service that says that's appropriate for the short term, but then also thinking long term, there may be ways to apply commercial efforts farther downstream. What we didn't talk about today was they don't reproduce their whole life cycle in just the upper river. They have to spawn downstream and then swim up. So it gives us a point where we can attack the adults where they're upstream, and then we can attack them before they have a chance to get upstream. So we get better over time.
Yeah. Let me give you just a little more detail on that. This area here is the area of the waterway system that Kevin's referencing, and they are using what's known as contract commercial fishermen to go in and fish down the leading edge of big heads and silvers. Kevin's staff has been doing this for about 4 years. The more we've looked at this technique, the more we've been impressed with it. So we actually have Great Lakes Restoration Initiative money, GLRI money, that's going to the state of Illinois to hire contract commercial fishermen to reduce the numbers of fish in this area, and it seems to be working. The key is Illinois is making sure that they get good data with that work so that over time we can tell if we're spending our money properly and wisely. Right now it looks like it's a good investment because the numbers keep dropping, the average size of fish keeps shrinking, etc. So it's got some real potential, and we're continuing to stress that this might be another tool to use out into the future.
Okay, thank you. Can you guys talk about the status of the Brandon Road Army Corps study? When, if at all, we might see the preliminary results released? And then, Mr. Andrews, I was wondering if you could just speak about the importance of that study.
Sure. I have to defer anything topics when it comes to the Brandon Road study to the Corps of Engineers.
Sure. Well, thank you very much for that question. As for the status of the report, that release is pending further coordination. I'm afraid don't have any more information for you when it will be released.
So no updates since February 27th.
Yeah, I'm sorry.
Given the lack of eDNA found, might that suggest entrainment across the barrier?
The size of this fish makes it unlikely. A fish that big could get entrained in a barge void that's pretty small. Again, we really pride ourselves on working with the science and the facts, so we can't rule anything out. But it just doesn't seem to fit the pattern of entrainment that we see potentially with small fish. with a fish that's that big.
I would add to that too. We're going to have some autopsy results. There's some techniques that the universities can apply that may be able to give us some environmental history, where that fish grew up, where it was born, and may enlighten that. You know, did it get? We don't know exactly how physically it got there, but we'd, you know, put a timeline together. Has it been there a while? Did it come from some other part of the Illinois River Basin or even outside the basin? But we'll be able to have more, or hopefully, more science behind that.
And Kevin, when do we expect to have that information available?
The end of July. I talked to Dr. Whitledge at Southern Illinois University last week, and he thinks they're on track for the end of the month.
With all this removal that's occurring by the commercial fishermen, where is that fish going? How is it disposed of?
Sure. And it's really important because we want to talk about contract removal. They essentially are extended agents working with our team. Those are made into liquid fish fertilizer, dog treats, a couple of different companies. We have four in all. We try not to landfill any. In fact, we've landfilled very little over the, well, since 2010, Charlie, mm-hmm. since we first started doing this. We also don't put it in the human food chain. Even though it's high-quality food, we're trying to maximize removal so we don't have the ice on the boats, and we want to make sure we fill the boats before we come in. If we were targeting or trying to get in the food web, we'd have to do something a little bit different. We also don't want to compete with those slowly developing industries farther downstream that, you know, that's the highest price tag is for human food. So we're trying to balance those things.
Just a couple questions on the threshold for eDNA. What's kind of the detection limit, and then how long does the DNA persist in the environment to a quality that would allow you to detect it and, you know, confirm that it's an Asian carp?
Can you go ahead and take the first crack?
Okay. We've done a lot of work with eDNA. It's on our website. The Corps of Engineers did a lot of that early work. We know certainly eDNA can come from fish. We know it also can come through birds, barges, our own gear. We were suspicious that it was coming from, and then sewers where areas of Chinatown who use these fish for food, even though they're dead, we've seen eDNA coming from those locations. Specifically, Charlie can speak to his lab, does a lot of this work through the Whitney's Genetics Lab in La Crosse, Wisconsin, and they're an important part of the team. We're learning more all the time about how many pieces or fragments it takes.
Yeah, we're pretty confident that we can detect eDNA that's been in the water for at least a couple of days. Each year, our tools and techniques get better and better. Really have to give the Army Corps of Engineers credit because 3 or 4 years ago, they really did some extensive work working with Fish and Wildlife Service, U.S. Geological Survey, Illinois, to further refine this. We had a list of 4 or 5 questions that we needed answers. Corps was very gracious and provided some expertise out of their ERDC lab down south to answer those questions for. So the science keeps getting better and better.
Where's your greatest concentration of the silver carp in the Illinois River?
Sure, great question. And if you look at that map, you'll see some red below Starved Rock. Thank you, Bill. So we're actually looking downstream of our real focus areas for can be, you know, six times more abundant than our focus area in the upper river. So that's the lower, about 200 and 240 miles of the Illinois River. Places like Peoria, if you go by navigation pools, it's the Peoria Pool, LaGrange Pool, and Alton Pools.
So the funding for the increased activity through the contingency plan is all coming through GLRI, is that correct?
That is correct. Yeah, thankfully, we've got that to bolster our efforts.
Mm-hmm. The Fish and Wildlife Service funding, we do get some GLRI funds now, but over the last 4 years, Congress has really been great in appropriating base funding for us to do this work. So we're up. When we started this, we had $0 base funding for any of the Asian carp work about 7 years ago. We had to rely on GLRI. We're slowly weaning ourselves off of the Great Lakes Restoration Initiative money. We have about $8 million in our base now that the Congress has provided us to do Asian carp work in the Great Lakes and to start to expand in the Ohio River and the Upper Mississippi River as well.
Matt, if I could just clarify, Bill Bolden, US EPA. And so in the 2017 action plan, we have dedicated $17 million toward our combined efforts. and we are committed to help Kevin and Charlie do whatever else they need to do on this intensive monitoring. So we are there for them, and they're there for us. So thank you.
Well, I think if there are no more questions, I think we are through here. So I will post it. I will make sure to email out the slideshow and all the materials. Feel free to contact me. My name, again, is Matt McKenna. I'm with the Northeast Midwest Institute. My email is mmckenna@nemw.org. And hopefully we will be able to post a recording of the conversation today along with the slideshow on our website. So, again, please feel free to let me know if you have any other questions. I'm more than happy to try to answer them or put you in touch with the proper person. Thank you very much.